Today is Thursday, December the 3rd, 2015. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitch Shir on Parshas Vayeshev and something on Hanukkah.
I'd like to remind everybody to please take their phones and silence them, please. Or vibrate them, whatever you'd like to do. I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I'd like to thank Young Israel for being so kind, setting up, allowing us to have this beautiful class with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. There's a couple of things that I want to mention. First of all, we have a very good friend, Floyd Babbitt, who unfortunately just lost his mother, and so our condolences. We're really sorry, and we're going to dedicate the class in her memory, if you don't mind. Another reason for this class. It's a yahrzeit for my father tomorrow night, and so that's another reason why this class is dedicated to my dear father, Eliezer Ben Chaim, who was a very, very fine man, extremely straight man, handsome, funny, very smart, very kind, generous. A very kind and generous man. He did tremendous kindnesses without anybody knowing about it. And many of them were told to me after he passed on. Some really wonderful stories. And then finally, we have another wonderful reason why we're sponsoring this class, Lynn and I, and that is because we have wonderful news that our daughter Emily got engaged. The lucky boy is Baruch Hashem for the lucky boy.
Mazel tov, mazel tov.
It's Rabbi Devorin's son, Yoel. Yoel Devorin. And they're Chicagoans, in case you don't know them. They're educators. And it's a very, very lovely family. Many of you already met, I'm sure, Yoel. But I've gotten to know him very well over the last year or so. And the more I know him, the more I love the kid. He's a wonderful boy. Also, I just want to mention that if you have a hearing aid, put it up, because Rav Moshe's a little bit under the weather. And so I'm going to ask you to please bear with him and turn off the phone. Please, let's not interrupt the class. And if you can move a little bit closer so you'll be able to hear him, I think it would be advisable. So if you want to just move a little bit closer, it would be a good thing. Okay.
I won't do that, Dad.
I want to take my prerogative. I'm not sure what that prerogative is, by the way, but whatever it is, if I have one, I want to take it and say that this afternoon I tried to convince Rabbi Soloveitch to take it out and to save his voice and preserve his well-being if he wants to cancel the class, and he refused. And we should all appreciate that first. And if Rabbi Soloveitch decides during the class to shorten it, to make it more brief than usual, please everybody understand.
Okay, the last thing I want to mention, and I'm sorry that I forgot it. My very good friend and many of us in the community have a very good friend, and his name is Ronnie Sloven. And the Milchik Meals yet we bring here the lasagnas and the thin pizzas and the sandwiches. That comes from a restaurant in Skokie, and it's called EJ's. And the other night, Mr. Sloven was working, and all the employees left. The last customer left, and unfortunately, he had a major stroke. And he was there the whole night. And, you know, they were, I understand they were very fortunate to find him alive in the morning. And so they're going to be doing a procedure. He really needs our prayers. He really does. And we're going to be saying to him, they're asking us to do so. He's going through this major procedure now. And his Hebrew name is Reuven David Ben Chana.
Reuven
David Ben Chana. And his English name is Ronnie Sloven. It's a very quiet and very, very nice person. And he's always been, he's always treated our class exceptionally well. He always made sure that the food was hot and specially made. And so just wanted to wish him a refuah shleima myself.
Right.
Reb Moshe?
Yeah, okay. I ask everybody will bear with me. I think you'll be able to hear me.
I wish you a refuah shleima also.
Thank you.
They're going to get the recording in.
It's okay.
All right.
The this week, Sedra is Parshas Vayeshev. Vayeshev is usually, almost always, the Shabbos before Chanukah. So we have to assume that there is some relationship between Parshas Vayeshev and Chanukah. I want to suggest two possible explanations. One explanation is based on the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma says, he says this in regard to Purim, and he says this in regard to Chanukah as well. He says that we're not celebrating the victory as much as what was achieved through the victory. And he brings certain proof. He says the Megillah tells us about Purim, that Purim is observed on the 14th and 15th of Adar. Cities that did not have walls around it observe it on the 14th of Adar. Cities that had walls around it, they observe it on the 15th. Why? Because they're treated like Shushan, which had a wall, not a little different, but Shushan celebrate the 15th. Why did Shushan celebrate the 15th? Because the Jewish people fought. The war was on the 13th. But in Shushan, they fought on the 14th as well. And the Megillah says, Kayamim asher nachu bahem ha-Yehudim mesoneihem. The celebration of Purim, the reading of the Megillah, has to be like the days that the Jews rested from their enemies. And as an indication that the celebration is on the day that they rested, that they no longer had to fight, those places that the war was over on the 13th, celebrate on the 14th. And those places that the war was over on the 14th, they celebrate on the 15th. Shushan celebrates on the 15th, and for whatever reason, Yerushalmi discusses, cities that have walls around that are identified with Shushan. And Hanukkah, he mentions the Ran. The Ran says that the word Hanukkah means Chanukah. They rested on the 25th of Kislev. There is a dispute, very strange dispute, between the Maharil and some of the other commentaries. Maharil says something that's a very big Kiddush. He suggests that many Jews had a practice not to work the first day of Hanukkah and not to work the eighth day of Hanukkah. We don't have this custom. But so he says, Kayyame, that Chanukah means that the Jewish people, when they won the war, they celebrated by refraining from work. Chanukah. However, the accepted explanation, all the children's books explain Hanukkah that way, is Chanukah, that they rested from war. Yes. I know. Chanukah, that they rested from war. And the Meshech Chachma, Rameir Simcha, he assumes that explanation also. He says, why? Because what we're celebrating is that the Jews were finally at peace. But there is a problem. And that problem is a historical problem, a factual problem. The problem is that the war with the Greeks really went for about 50 more years. So how could you say 40 some odd years, whatever it was, how could you say Chanukah? It's true, they captured the Beis HaMikdash. They purified the temple, but the war itself continued for 40, 50 years. How could you say Chanukah? But I think there is a very simple answer. I actually suggested it here. At the Sheva Brachas that Jerry made, it was Chanukah time. So Chanukah, what I think is initially, and the truth is that our sages do not emphasize this point, and it's a question why they don't emphasize the point. We talk about the war being a war with the Greeks. The truth is, the Greeks hardly played a role. Even the foreign armies that came to Israel to fight the Hasmonaim, the Syrians, Syria was under the Greek Empire. The Greek Empire was divided after Alexander the Great died into three different parts, and each part had its own king. So the Israel was part of the Greek Empire, and it was part of the Syrian part of the Greek Empire. But we don't even talk about the Syrians. Yevanim. We talk about the Greeks. Why? Because it was the Greek ideology. Whatever the Greek ideology was, it was the Greek ideology that was in a sense, in a war with the Jewish ideology. But it wasn't just the Syrian Greeks. The original war was against the Hellenist Jews. The Rambam in the Igeres Teimud, the Rambam in the Igeres Teimud says that the overwhelming majority of the Jewish people were on the side of the Hellenists originally. He said that the Hashmonaim were a small group, but little by little that group grew and became stronger. So the war, just when the Hashmonaim were seemed to having one victory after another, the Hellenists had to bring in the aid of the Syrian Greeks. And what I wanted to suggest, that up till Chaf Hei Kislev, and up till the 25th of Kislev, when the Beis HaMikdash was conquered, the war was perceived primarily as a civil war between Jew and Jew. But after Chaf Hei Kislev, it's true the war continued for 40 or 50 years, but not that there weren't some Hellenistic Jews, but the war was primarily against the Syrian Greeks. So when we say Chanu Chaf Hei, they rested. It means they rested for fighting their brothers. It's very interesting. The Rambam in the Geres Teimud, Geres Kiddush Hashem, he also discusses Chanukah. But the Geres Teimud, what happened is there was the Muslims were taking all kinds of measures against the Jewish people. And there arose somebody who said that if someone succumbs to the religious things that the Muslim said, there is no possibility of tshuva, no possibility of repentance. And the Rambam was very angry with that statement. And the Rambam says, we say, Rishon Biyad Tzadikim, that God gave over the Rishayim into the hands of the Tzaddikim. He says, who was those Tzaddikim? He says, those Tzaddikim, we're not talking about the 10 or 12 people who were originally among the band of Hashmonaim that started the revolt. He says the Tzaddikim were those who were on the sides of the Hellenists and then changed over to the sides of the Hashmonaim. So Chaf Hei Kislev represents the end of the Civil War. Now when you take a look at Parshas Vayeshev, what is Parshas Vayeshev? Parshas Vayeshev is the first civil war between Jew and Jew, between Yosef and his brothers. My father told me, I think I mentioned it here, that at one time there was a big dispute in Balazs Yeshiva. Who should be the Rosh Yeshiva? And there were group students who supported the Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. And there were those that supported the Beis Halevi, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. Now, you might think that I'm no gay of a Dover, but I'm not, because I'm a descendant of both of them. So, okay. So, So I have no... the Beis Halevi's son, Reb Chaim, married the Nitziv's granddaughter. Reb Chaim was my father's grandfather. The Nitziv's granddaughter was my father's grandmother. Okay, so, but in any case, so they had a Beis Din.
So who do you take after?
Jerry, unfortunately, I can't claim to take after any one of them. Okay, but they had a Din Torah. It's a very odd Din Torah. Who sat on the Din Torah? Let's see if I can remember the names. They brought in great people. I think the Nachos David, Rabbi Yosef David Tevel. They had Reb Zev, who was the Magid Meisharim in Vilna. Now, Vilna, after the time, from the time of the Vilna Gaon, did not officially have a rabbi. The job of rabbi was divided in two. And those were the two most coveted positions in Europe at that time. There was the Av Beis Din, the head of the Beis Din, and there was the Magid Beis Sharim. And they shared the duties of leading the Vilna community. So, and then he was the youngest one, Reb Yossel Slutsker. Reb Yossel Slutsker was a student of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. And the youngest one was Reb Yitzchol Chaner, who was extremely young in those days, younger than the Dayanim, younger than the kid, but he was held in such high esteem that he was also on this Beis Din. Anyway, Reb Zev, the Magid Beis Sharim of Vilna, he said it was his job to give the drasha every Shabbos in the shul in Vilna. That was part of his rabbinical duties. So he says every Shabbos he takes two parties and he compares them or contrasts them. One is the saint, and the other is the villain. Let's say, so he says, when he deals in Parshas Bereishis, so he talks about Cain and Hevel. Hevel is the saint, and Cain is the villain. In Parshas Noach, he compares Noach, the righteous one, he compares Noach with the Dor HaFloga, the generation that built the tower. When he gets to Parshas Lech Lecha, he says, so there he compares the shepherds of Avram to the shepherds of Lot. And then when he gets to Vayera, he probably compares Avram with the people of Zdob. And so on and so forth. He says when he gets to Parshas Vayeshev, he doesn't speak. He says, because who is there to contrast? He says, you have Yosef, and you have his brothers. They were all tzaddikim. They were all righteous. He can't paint one as being the villain. So Parshas Vayeshev was a week that he did not speak. Probably it was the largest dominion of the week. But anyway, so That he said, the same thing is true. He says he doesn't know what to do in this din Torah. He says, you have the Netziv and you have the Beis Halevi. Both are tzaddikim. Both are righteous. So he feels like he's facing the same problem he faces every year when he gets the Parshas Vayeshev. Okay, but whatever it was, there was a civil war between Yosef and his brothers. And basically the three Sedras, Vayeshev, which is the Shabbos before Chanukah, Miketz, which is usually the Shabbos of Chanukah, and Vayigash, it's in that week that you have the final days of Chanukah. Of course, it's rare. It does happen on rare occasions that Chanukah should be Shabbos Vayigash. But Vayigash, you have the Miketz, usually you have some Vayigash, excuse me, in the week of Vayigash, you have some days of Chanukah also. These Sedras talk about fighting between brothers, fighting between the Shvatim, fighting between within the Jewish community. And it concludes with peace being made. And that's what the real, what Chanukah is all about. Chanukah is about peace being made. And it's interesting that if you take a look at the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Chanukah, he mentions that if somebody has a choice between lighting Chanukah candles and Shabbos candles, and this is the halacha brought down in the Gemara, he has very little money and he can only buy one candle. The question is, should he use that candle for a Shabbos candle or for a Chanukah candle? So the Gemara says, and the Rambam quotes the Gemara, that he uses it for the Shabbos candle. Why? You have to realize in those days, if you didn't have the Shabbos candle in the house, there was darkness in the house. And people would trip, and that situation is not conducive to Shalom Bayis, the Gemara says, to harmony within the home. And because the Shabbos candle is conducive to harmony in the home, the Shabbos candle takes precedence over the Chanukah candle. And then the Rambam goes on and gives almost a sermon. And he says the whole Torah was given to make peace in the world. And that's how he concludes the laws of Chanukah. He concludes the laws of Chanukah, which is a celebration of a military victory, by talking about the importance of peace. But how does he begin to talk about peace? By talking about the Shabbos candle. In other words, and this is something I think President Obama should understand. Peace at the borders is, of course, there it's different. It's not a civil war. Peace at the borders doesn't have much meaning unless there's peace within the borders. You know, you can contain ISIS perhaps in Syria, but it really doesn't do a lot of good if they're doing terrorism in the United States. So the idea is the importance of peace, peace within the borders, peace with the Syrians and whoever else we're fighting at the borders. Is a noble thing, it's important. But Asati Shalom Baretz. And if you don't have peace, Rashi says that you don't have anything. The more important than peace at the borders is peace within the borders. And that's what Chanukah commemorates. Commemorates peace within the borders. I want to suggest one other answer. My mind isn't working so well, so I have to try to remember what the answer was. Yes. Okay. Parshas Vayeshev talks about the dreams that Yosef had. And we know that the brothers got upset with the dreams. They felt threatened by the dreams of Yosef. On one hand, they were threatened because the dreams of Yosef talked about them bowing down to him. And that's one of the famous questions. We just said that Yosef and his brothers were tzaddikim, were righteous people. How is it possible for the brothers who are righteous to take Yosef and put him in a pit? More than that, they were even contemplating killing him. How we understand that? But the answer, I think, is it didn't dawn on them that Yosef would become assistant to the king in Egypt. What did it dawn on them? That Yaakov was going to appoint Yosef as his successor. But Yosef wouldn't be a king. Now, who bows down to who? The slave bows down to the master. So, they interpreted Yosef's dream that Yosef's plan was to make them his slaves. And not only that was his plan, but they saw him succeeding in the plan because Yaakov made the Kisonis Pasim, the special clothes, that was indicative of leadership, that was indicative of special prominence. He made it for Yosef. So they felt threatened. And in a sense, they considered Yosef a rodef, a pursuer. The halacha is that if someone is running after me to kill me, I kill him first. Of course, the European countries will say that that's excessive. Okay, except that's only, of course, when they're running against Israel. When they're running against them, they say, we will not have any mercy. Okay, so my uncle mentioned that in one of the dreams there was another threat, and really it sheds light on the whole story of Yosef. Yosef has a dream. And in the dream, v'hinei anachnu malim alumim, we're making bundles of wheat. Now, the Avraham Yitzchak, for the most part, not that there weren't exceptions, but for the most part, Avraham and Yitzchak were shepherds. And Yosef has this dream that they are in an agricultural setting. Egypt worshipped cattle at that time. You know, as the dynasties of different kings changed, so what they worshipped also changed. But at that time, there was at least a large group within Egypt that worshipped cattle. That's mentioned in regard to the Korban Pesach also. That was an earlier group, but apparently that group was the group that was there when Yaakov came down, and that was the group of Egyptians that the Jewish people dealt with. And instead, obviously, if they worshipped cattle, you didn't have shepherds. So it was that. That's why Paro told the brothers that they shouldn't live in the center of Egypt, but they should go to Goshen. Because Goshen, I guess, was a less religious area. They were more tolerant. So, but you see, for Rashi tells us that in spite of the fact that Yosef was assistant to the king, the Egyptians wouldn't even eat together with him. Because he ate meat. He was not, So what was the dispute? So the brothers felt threatened. Why did they feel threatened? They felt threatened because Yosef was talking about changing circumstances. They felt that so long as the circumstances stay the same, so long as the environment remains the same, they will be able to remain committed. They and their children and their children's children will remain committed to Torah and Mitzvahs. But they didn't know what will happen when the environment changes. My uncle mentioned, the Medrash says that Avram was called Avraham Ivri, Me'aver Hanar, from the other side of the river. He says Jewish history is not just from the other side of the river. And that's what Yosef realized. It's from the other side of the ocean also. In other words, our commitment cannot be situational. Our commitment has to be irregardless of the changing circumstances that take place. The Jewish people, I mention all the time, the Jewish people accepted the Torah. They said, Da'aseh v'nishma. They were on a level higher than angels. But then 40 days later, they stand in front of a golden calf. By the way, according to many, the calf was the god of one of the groups in Egypt at the time. And they stand in front of a golden calf and they say, Eloheichu Yisrael, this is your God, O Israel. 40 days! What happened? The circumstances changed. Why? Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't with them for 40 days. The true test of a yeshiva education is not how the student performs or acts while he's in the yeshiva. The true test is after he leaves the yeshiva. But Yosef said, we're going to have to make some changes. Not chas v'shalom changes in our religion, but changes in our lifestyle. And many people are hesitant to make changes in their lifestyle because they feel insecure. And there are those who feel insecure on a religious level because of these changes. They know that their father and their grandfather and their great-grandfather all worked in this store. Stores used to be given over from generation to generation. And in that store, they remained committed to Torah and mitzvahs. But who knows what happens when they stop being that storekeeper and they take another job. One of the reasons the brothers felt threatened, because Yosef talked of changing circumstances. But Yosef understood that we have to be prepared for changing circumstances. When we educate children, sure, we could say this is an ideal situation, but we have to educate them not just for the situation which we consider ideal. We have to educate them for situations that they might have to move to other communities. And in those other communities, they have to remain committed to Torah and mitzvahs. And in a sense, that requires sometimes thinking of new ideas. What you had in Hanukkah, you had the brothers, the Chashmonaim, they were all Kohanim. The general rule was that Kohanim did not go to war. They were allowed to, but they could not be forced to go to war. When you spoke of the soldiers of Israel, you weren't speaking about the Kohanim. The Kohanim's lives were dedicated to God. But B'makom She'inish, when the whole community comes under the influence of the Hellenists, so you need a Matishyahu to say, well, they say that he said Mila Hashem Eli. I've never seen that brought down in the Medrash. But what he did say, this is brought down in the Medrash. He said that I will be like my ancestor Pinchas. That's what he said. In other words, sometimes we have to change our approach to ensure that the Mesorah continues. Not Chas v'Shalom, to change our commitment. But we have to sometimes change our approach to ensure that our commitment remains. And in different places and in different times, this manifests itself in different ways. And I think that's the connection between Parshas Vayeshev and Chanukah. Parshas Vayeshev and Chanukah is that where circumstances demand a different approach, changing circumstances demand a different approach. To preserve the Mesorah, we have to be ready to change our approach.
Thank you so much.
He's right here.
I'd like to say a couple of things, please.
Deborah's here.
Please clean off the tables as best as you can. Leave the tablecloths on top of the tables, and in about 5 minutes, we're going to be having Mara.